Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 8th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things over there?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
So as you can tell, I'm a little under the weather, kind of lost my voice, and I still don't really have it back. So I'm just going to ask everyone to forgive me. You're going to have to listen to my croaky voice this week. The good news is I went and got a test because I was starting to get paranoid, right, as you do when you have a cold these days. And I'm negative, so it's just a cold. But in any event, so have you been back to your routine? I think I saw some Facebook photos, Alex, of beers on the beach. So I guess you've had okay weather of late up there.
Yeah, it's been nice, actually. We've been very lucky. And yeah, if I get a chance, I'll walk down the beach, have a beer and chill out towards the end of the day. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, it's a nice place to be. Things in Paris are, we had some beautiful weather. So it's been great, although it's gotten a little chilly today. But in any event, spring is like totally around the corner. I can sense it. The big thing for me over the last few days, we did this event for deferred admissions. So this is when college students apply to business school and basically reserve their seat. So just hundreds of candidates ended up signing up for that event. And we had great conversations with admissions directors over at Berkeley, MIT, Wharton, Yale, and Carnegie Mellon. And you might, if you're listening, be wondering why I'm even talking about this. Well, the reason is that you can actually watch a recording of this. So if you're someone thinking about a deferred enrollment type MBA or know someone who is, you can send them over to our website and they can actually watch a video of the whole thing. My voice was already going when I recorded that, but hopefully it's tolerable. And we had a lot of fun with that event. So very cool stuff. But Alex, I wanted to ask you to tell me, like, what's going on right now? Because I feel like there's a lot of anxiety and nerves in the applicant pool. And, you know, people are kind of don't know what to do with themselves. But can you give us a summary of, like, where are we in the round two process?
Yeah, we're still about a week away from the floodgates opening in terms of top schools releasing those round two decisions. So it's still, there is a lot of anxiety. We have a discussion on Livewire currently pinned that sort of reflects that. Lots of folks sort of sharing their sort of non-productive work life currently and what they're trying to do to distract themselves from hitting the reload buttons at different schools or checking their email constantly or whatever it is. Fortunately, the schools mostly do have definitive dates that they release their decisions. And several of those schools then start making phone calls 1, 2, or 3 days before those dates. So when you get into that 2 or 3 day period before an official release date, that's when the anxiety levels just go through the roof, because now you look staring at your phone, wondering why it's not ringing and so on and so forth. So yeah, lots of anxiety, but you know, hopefully, you know, these are folks that have interviewed, lots of them have interviewed, so they've gotten to a good stage of the process. Best of luck to them all, but mostly they'll be waiting at least another week, I would think, Graham.
Yeah, I guess in the words of the late, great Tom Petty, the waiting is the hardest part. It's really, you know, this is the tough time of year where most people have, you know, they've actually done their interviews already, so they're just kind of sitting around and they should be working, but it's hard. And I even tried to get people talking in that thread that we pinned on Livewire about, like, okay, what kind of a laptop are you going to buy for business school, or what are you watching, reading, et cetera. But it, you know, things just keep invariably circling back to, I haven't heard from this school yet. Do you think I'm going to hear about an interview, or, you know, so it's it's a tough time, but I too want to just join you in wishing everyone the best of luck. Hopefully listening to this podcast helps a little bit. We try not to get people's nerves too amped up. You know, just sit tight. You'll get word eventually. And in the meantime, you know, listen, watch, read, whatever you need to do to kind of mellow out.
I'm going to put you on the spot now, Graham.
Uh-oh.
since you mentioned this Tom Petty lyric, what is your favorite lyric from Panama?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You might need to explain to the audience who Panama is, but I'd be curious what your favorite lyric is.
Oh, I, you know, it's funny. I don't. So Panama is the band that I play in. And actually, everyone listening knows the band, whether they know it or not, because the music that you hear when this podcast begins is from a Panama song that was on our first record. So, yeah, I don't know, Alex, about lyrics. I mean, I've been working on a new song, actually, about social media I'm quite pleased with one of the lines in it, but the song's not out yet, and it's a line, I'm going to try to remember exactly how it goes, but it's a line that basically says, he's got a lot of likes up on Instagram, but he knows that life ain't nothing like the lens of a cam, or something like that. I can't remember how it's worded exactly to rhyme and fit with the song, but there's this idea that, you know, what people put up on social media, the way that your camera sees things is not really, especially with all the filters and things, is not really the way life is. So,
I hate to put you on the spot, Graham, but that was absolutely fantastic. And I will say to the audience, I'm a huge fan of Panama. It's kind of a bit like the Proclaimers meets, and I forget what the other band was that I said, Arctic Monkeys, Proclaimers, Arctic Monkeys. Oh, yeah. And I think there was another band that sort of, in terms of the types of music. Anyway, absolutely fantastic. I know we're completely off topic, Graham, so let's get more focused. Right.
Yeah, so, one thing I was going to say is I haven't heard any reviews for the podcast or seen any of late, but then you just told
me. Oh, we got one, Graham.
All right.
Yeah. But it's on Reddit. Actually, very cool. Because we had a Reddit guest a couple of episodes ago, I sort of got more active back on Reddit, because I've been on Reddit for quite a while, but yep. I've been quite silenced for a period of time, which is bad, actually. I very much like participating on the Reddit forum. So I've been participating lately. In fact, I was responding to a comment or a question about how does Rod Garcia interview. So
oh boy.
I thought I could contribute a little bit to that discussion, but I said nothing because obviously I've never actually interviewed with Rod. But anyway, one of the responses, and I'll read it, it's quite good. Oh my gosh, it's Alex. Just want to say hi, let everyone know. You guys are my favorite podcast. That's absolutely brilliant. I still listen even after getting in just because I enjoy it so much. I just think that's really cool, Graham. You reviewed my profile on ApplyWire like a year or so ago, and it was very helpful. Keep up the good work and say hello to Graham. So, Graham, hello.
All right. Well, hello back to that person who's a loyal listener. That's awesome. Yeah, I like to think that it's fun to listen each week, even after you've gotten in, but that's cool to hear.
Yeah.
If people do want to ask us questions or reach out to us in any way, shape, or form, they can always email info@clearadmit.com, use the subject line wiretaps, and we've been seeing a couple of emails come in that way, so that's cool. A nice way for us to connect with you all. Over on the website this week, we did three kind of interesting pieces. One is about Emory opening up a new center for entrepreneurship and innovation. And then Kellogg got a $3 million gift for their HCAK program, which is the healthcare at Kellogg program. And I believe this specific donation is really focused on a biopharma initiative, which seems pretty timely to me. So that's good news for healthcare stuff at Kellogg. And then we just ran, we ran a piece about women in business school at Duke. So that was kind of a cool Fridays from the front lines where we hear from, you know, voices on campuses. So this week was, or last week, I guess, was Duke. So check that stuff out. Alex, I'm ready to get into the wiretaps portion. I know that you've selected three candidates as always, and you claim that this, you only realized it after the fact, but these candidates are kind of intertwined and interconnected in some fun ways that, again, seems like it was coincidental, but very cool. So is there anything else though that you wanted to talk about before we dive into that stuff?
No, let's get started.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is an ApplyWire entry that we received, and the candidate wants to start in the fall of 22, so they're not applying until next fall. The target list is rather long, but has Berkeley, Columbia, Duke, LBS, Northwestern, Kellogg, NYU, Stanford, UCLA, and Wharton. This person's been working in sales management for a consumer packaged goods company. I believe it's General Mills. And they are thinking post-MBA of getting into tech or maybe sticking with consumer goods. And they have a long list of companies, including Apple, Google, if they do the tech stuff. They even have Peloton on the kind of, I guess, product side of things. GPA is a 3.4. They did undergrad, I think, at McCombs. So they have a kind of a business undergrad with a 3.4 from UT Austin. They have 5 years of work experience. They're out in the Bay Area currently, and they would love to stay there or move to Southern Cal or potentially New York or back to Austin or Dallas in Texas. They did mention that they're a first-generation Pakistani-American female, and they have not yet taken the GMAT, but they're aiming for a 720. There are a lot of other details shared in this post, but Alex, I want to turn it over to you and just get your take on this person's candidacy. I mean, she's, you know, there's a lot on offer here. There's a lot of information that she shared. But what do you make of her chances given the school list?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually a very strong candidate, frankly, Graham. If she hits that target of 720, that would be very good. Obviously, as we've discussed on this podcast before, that's no mean feat. I mean, clearly 720 is outstanding. So she'll have a work cut out to do that. But if she can do that, what are we talking about here? Well, 5 years of work experience in consumer packaged goods, I believe. And it looks like she's done very well at work. So, you know, with promotions and so on and so forth. So good progression. So I think that's going to be very attractive in of itself for business schools. So you've got someone that's successful at work with good numbers. You know, the GPA is not outstanding, but if they get a 720 GMAT, I mean, 5 years of experience and so on. So to me, that's all very good. And then she talked about being very involved at work with sort of diversity and inclusion efforts and recruiting and so on and so forth. So now I'm starting to think, well, this is a real doer. This is someone that really gets involved and does stuff. And I personally have a bias to liking that. But I think that's part of my adcom hat coming out, adcom like that. And then it's like, well, the only thing I'm missing here is, well, what do you do outside of work? I mean, are you just a worker and completely involved in work and doing all your sort of community service work related? And it's like, well, actually, they're a power lifter or something like that. I mean, I didn't really understand what doing local event, local Olympic power events. I don't really understand what that means, because to me, Olympic means it's once every 4 years. But nevertheless, that just sounds super, super interesting. A really different aspect of the candidacy. And then she can tie that stuff together with this whole notion of empowerment. And that becomes something that she wants to hang a hat on in terms of her long-term goals. So I could go on and on about all this stuff, Graham, but all that stuff sounds really good to me.
Yeah. I can't help but wonder, though. I mean, so I read her profile, and I think she mentioned, yeah, Olympic weightlifting and powerlifting. So are you being nice to her because you don't want to run into her after the fact and, you know, having given her a harsh review? but no, in all seriousness, I think she has a lot of the components that you would look for someone going to like an M7 school.
Yeah.
With that said, like I will say there's like a little nagging concern I have with the numbers, right? So as you said, 3-4, it's a little below average if you want to go to a Harvard or a Stanford or a Wharton or something. But she went to an undergraduate business school that's quite well regarded. And so you could say, well, that's probably good enough, right? But then the GMAT she hasn't done yet. And so if she does hit 720, I start to feel a little more comfortable, as you're saying. Personally, like, I mean, if I were her, I would like, she's got time. So I would work my butt off and try to get like a big GMAT score, because that could just write her ticket and maybe some scholarship dollars across the board at top schools. So all this to say, I would feel if she had submitted this profile with a 750, which I recognize is like an outrageously high GMAT score, then I would be singing her praises like loud and clear. I think until we have the test score, it's a little fuzzy, but again, there's a lot to like. First generation, this whole weightlifting and powerlifting thing, coupled with a really strong track record in CPG. The one thing I would advise is I like her CPG theme, and I almost feel like this whole pivot into tech isn't necessarily going to play as well. Like, I feel like if she were just to be passionate about CPG, and that could be maybe sport related. So maybe it's linked to like working at a Nike or a Peloton like she has here. That would all work well for me. I just was worried that this sort of leap out of CPG and over to like an Apple or whoever else she had on the list might just be harder to pitch, and like there'd be less sort of threads to weave between the past and the future. What do you think about that part?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there in terms of make sure that you have a cogent story. And she does have a great story to tell. And it's important that, you know, she works on that story and it all makes perfect sense. So at the end of the day, when she's in business school, sure, she could look at some of these tech firms and maybe continue some interest in those. But that story going in, that focus going in, I think makes a lot more sense. Focusing on CPG, focusing on maybe, like you said, even brands like Peloton, Nike, and so on and so forth. So blending that sports fitness stuff that she's doing outside of work, that empowerment and what tech is doing in the sports fitness domain to enable that empowerment and so forth. I think that's really super interesting. The final thing back to you, Graham, because I didn't mention it at all, but I do think it's important, and I kind of didn't mention it deliberately, but we'll come back to it now. The whole idea that she's accomplished all this as a first generation Asian American, Pakistani American female, how does that aspect dial into the overall profile?
I mean, I think it's impressive. I think the question you might be asking is it viewed in the same light as like a first generation, I don't know, Latin American or what do we say, Latinx candidate? I would argue no. I think that for one reason or another, there are more Asian Americans who are in the pool, and so they're kind of less coveted. And there's less of a, you know, there's obviously lots of people applying from both Pakistan and other, you know, countries like, say, India that are nearby that, you know, kind of flood the applicant pool, right? So it's still, I think, going to be a positive. I mean, there's nothing negative. I just think that it's not, she can't tick the same exact boxes that some other, like, underrepresented minorities might be able to tick. I don't know if you agree with that. I mean, you were on the other side of this, too, over at Wharton, but that's my view on it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And what I would say, because this candidate obviously is thinking well ahead of time, as you've stated, getting some of these applications in round one is probably going to be very helpful. You don't have to get all applications in round one when you're thinking this far ahead. You can split them between rounds, but certainly there's no reason for a candidate like this to wait for round two.
Yeah.
But anyway, overall, I think a great candidate, especially if she nails the GMAT like she reckons she can.
Yeah, agreed. And I would say she was asking like how to cut down that list of schools. And I would say take the test first and let that determine to some extent where she's going to be competitive. So I think she can wait, like get the test out of the way and then figure out her round strategy and which apps are going to go where. All right, so I think enough said on that. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry and another candidate looking to start school in the fall of 22. So another early bird. Again, I don't think you did this on purpose, but this person's also working in consumer goods and I believe is working at General Mills, but they are in Canada. Out of Toronto, and they want to pivot over to consulting or tech post-MBA. They've got Accenture, H.E. Carney, Bain, Booz Allen, BCG, McKinsey, as well as Tesla, Twitter, and Uber on the list of targets for post-business school. GMAT score 730, so they've already taken the test. They have a 3.7 GPA, and they have 2.5 years of work experience. I presume that's at the moment, so that'll be a little bit more by the time they apply. But Alex, what do you make this? This person is Canadian, but you know, again, kind of another consumer packaged goods. I believe that they said in the comments that they are Asian Canadian, so they have Canadian citizenship, but they immigrated as a child, and I think they told us from China, right? So what do you make of this candidate and their chances at the schools on their list, which I neglected to name, but are Berkeley, Columbia, Harvard, INSEAD, LBS, MIT, Kellogg, and Wharton.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the first, well, obviously there are some similarities as we've discussed, but with the first candidate, the schools themselves are spread sort of geographically quite wide. And a lot of this is the nature of applying, or not applying, but you know, they're thinking of applying next year. So this school list will shift and change over the course of the summer, no doubt. This candidate is on the fast track. So, our previous candidate had 5 years of experience in progressive experience and doing very well. This candidate's 2.5 years of experience, several promotions, and reckoned or let us know that they were promoted ahead of schedule and so on and so forth. So, I'm reading all that. I think that's all very good. Then I'm thinking to myself, well, is this person just in a hurry? Right. So sometimes you could read a profile and say, well, you know what, if you actually waited another couple of years, you'd be a much stronger overall candidate and so on and so forth. And you get more out of the program. But then sort of as I'm reading further into the profile, they still manage to have time to do some other stuff, because oftentimes when candidates in a hurry, all their focus is on progression at work, and they have no other life because they're solely focused on that, which, you know, again, I can understand some folks that's really important and that's how they get ahead at work. But then we start reading about other stuff that this candidate does and so on and so forth, the influence of music to this candidate when they were a young child, and how that, again, was an empowering aspect of for them, and therefore now they've gotten involved in a music project. It's actually in Tanzania, so which seems a little bit odd in terms of this is a Chinese Canadian that's now doing a project for music in Tanzania in their extracurricular stuff. But to me, Graham, if they're doing something really interesting in this regard, this becomes a really cool differentiating aspect of this candidate's profile. And I'm hoping that it's something they're doing at quite a substantial level. They're making an impact because they're passionate about music and what music has done for them. They're able now to bring this to, it's a village in Tanzania. They're looking to expand it to a second village, I think. And if they can continue that and show progression in that, whilst they're also showing very good progression at work, goals and everything else, this could be a super, super interesting candidate, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm really glad you brought up those extracurriculars. The one thing I was going to mention, just backtracking a second, is that they technically had an 83.6% GPA at Ivy, which is one of the top Canadian business schools. And they actually weren't sure how to convert it. They said that some of the conversions say that's a 3.7, but then Columbia Business School has their own conversion and it equates to like a 3.3. And what I want to just point out for our listeners is that it's well known by admissions officers that the Canadian schools don't really have much in the way of grade inflation, and that a place like Ivy, which is a very good business school in Canada, that 83.6 is going to be pretty well regarded. It's not going to be viewed at all in the same way as like an 83 would be in the United States. So I just wanted to mention that there's like no grade inflation in Canada. I'm interested in this kind of music angle that the candidate has. I thought it was fascinating that they said they played some sort of Chinese string instrument and then have migrated over to playing the cello when they moved to Canada. I think this outside kind of passion that they have, coupled with what seem to be very solid numbers and a good career to date, should make them competitive, even at the younger age that they're kind of applying at. And I don't think that I would recommend that they wait. I feel like they have a good head on their shoulders, kind of know what they want, and that, you know, can't hurt for them to apply. And again, they're not going to go anyway until the fall of 22. So yeah, I really like what I'm seeing here. I think the one thing I thought was funny is they said their target is a top 10 US MBA, but I noticed they have INSEAD and LBS on the list too. So I don't know if you noticed that or what you make of that. But I did wonder if, as a Canadian, there might be benefits to, you know, to going to school in the UK or being able to work in the UK. You might know more about that than I would. Or I'm not sure how these two international schools ended up on the list, if it's related to their being Canadian or just they're just looking at top schools. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, on school selection.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just think it's a function of them early in the process. They're picking out the top schools and they've selected a couple of the two top schools in Europe. One inside the EU and one outside the EU. Just got to throw that in there.
Got it. Okay. Yes.
But that would be my sense. But again, and the final point on this candidate, unless you have other things to suggest, is I do think this candidate wants to make sure they're in that first round if they possibly can be. So whilst, you know, from their profile, you know, first gen, Asian, Canadian or whatever, you, that particular niche might not be overrepresented in the population. They could get bucketed sort of more with the Asian American set or the China set, that both of which will be overrepresented in the pool. So there is advantage in this case, Graham, I think, in this candidate being there in the first round.
I agree, and I'm really glad you pointed that out, because I could see that happening, where they get bucketed in one of those more overrepresented groups. So yeah, apply early. I think that's about it for that one, though, and thank them. You know, want to thank both of our Applywire entries this week for submitting their profiles and allowing us to review them on the show. Alex, you had picked out one DecisionWire entry that we were going to talk about today that I was pumped for, because it was a candidate who had added schools, I guess, in round two based on our advice, and then gotten in, and they were kind of celebrating that fact. But then you switched it up on me. So we're going to talk about somebody else this week.
Yeah, it's hard to give advice twice to the same person, I guess. So yeah, I wasn't paying particular attention that we'd already done that.
Okay. all right. So this then is Wiretap's candidate number three. So we have another DecisionWire entry, and this person's undecided. They applied to Chicago, LBS, MIT, and Yale, and it seems that they ran the table. They got into all of the schools. It doesn't look like they were offered any scholarship dollars. They're going to be starting school this fall. They want to work in consulting, and surprise, surprise, they would love to work at Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. Their GMAT score is a 750. And their GPA is a 3.7. This person is located in Toronto. So that's the connection between candidates again. We've got a Canadian candidate, much like the second person we reviewed today. They mention in their notes that they like the MIT brand, but they want the London location and global diversity. And they indicate, you know, short term, they want to do MBB for a couple of years before transitioning into tech. And they say, I really like MIT's tech brand, so I'm choosing between MIT versus LBS. Any tips or pointers? So I'll turn it right over to you, Alex. What do you tell this person? What should they do?
Well, you know, the quick answer is, if you like the London location, you have to go to LBS, despite the fact that you like the MIT brand. But I mean, obviously, MIT, Sloan, super strong. London Business School, super strong. Chicago Booth, super strong. Yale, very good. These are top programs and very comparable. I mean, I might put Yale just slightly behind the other three in terms of their overall sort of, you know, what tier they fit in and so forth. And we do know, Graham, and we've said this before on several occasions, it's very hard to be truly comparable with European programs versus US programs. But I'm a big advocate that for some people, absolutely LBS compares in the same tier as the M7. For other people, it doesn't. But it depends on your goals and what you want to do. So for me, I would take a really hard look at, if I want to be in London, that's great. Obviously, LBS is my choice. But what about 5 years' time, I'm in Toronto and I'm sort of exploring the tech scene. I would really want to know, how strong is that LBS network in Toronto? And maybe this person doesn't have an ambition to return to Toronto, but wherever they want to be in, let's say, 5 years' time, how does LBS compare with Sloan in terms of providing them access to what they want to do in 5 years? Because the short-term answer to me is quite easy and quick, go to London. But I would really look hard at that 5 to 10 year time frame and see which school is going to give me the best opportunity.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to suggest that I don't know, I feel like if this person wants to work at MBB and then tech, MIT might be the best program they've gotten into. I mean, or you could argue Booth is as well, right? I guess what you're responding to is their desire to be in London. And it is true, the diversity in the class at LBS and in the city of London is going to be unparalleled, right? It's really hard to rival that with a US experience. This is a tough call, and I thought it was interesting that they quickly narrowed it to just MIT or LBS, because as one of our commenters pointed out, they're like, well, what about Booth or even Yale? You know, they made the case for those two, which are both excellent schools. This is really tricky. I absolutely, like you, would want to know, like, where do they want to be long term? And maybe they're saying, look, I want to work for MBB in London, and then I want to work for Google out of their London office. And so if that's all the case, then yes, I get this focus on just go to LBS. Like, don't look back. There was someone like suggesting on the site that LBS doesn't place well in MBB. I've never known that to be the case. I feel like they're doing an excellent job. I know the recruiter there who does some of that work. Like, they hire a ton of people out of LBS at, you know, from BCG, McKinsey, Bain, all these top firms. So I'm not so clear on that being a weakness. But this is a tough call. It really, for me, depends on where this person wants to be long term. And again, I don't know if you know, but I'm not sure what the deal is between Canada and the UK with respect to work because of the whole Commonwealth thing. Like, I don't know if that means that a Canadian can go to business school in the UK and then stay and work like for an unlimited amount of time or not. But if that's a factor, then, you know, that allows this person to be even more flexible. But yeah, this is a tough call because I think a lot of people would just say, look, MIT is a huge brand for tech wherever this person wants to go.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I wanted to say about it is that I know there's a really healthy exchange program between Sloan and LBS. I've actually talked with the admissions team at both schools about that. So I know that a number of students go back and forth each year. And so maybe that's a possibility for this candidate to get a little bit of both worlds as they experience the MBA. But yeah, what do you make of my comments? Because I'm curious, because for you, it seems like you're really saying LBS here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think your comments make a lot of sense. I can see why Booth's out of the equation, and this isn't comparing Booth to LBS. This is comparing Booth to Sloan, and if they want tech and MBB, then maybe they've decided that Sloan is the better choice than Booth.
Okay.
So now the question is, they've decided Sloan's the best choice in North America. So it's Sloan versus LBS. So I'm not discounting Booth in regards to Booth LBS, but I see how their calculus sort of has developed in that regard. And yeah, I mean, obviously Sloan's brand's absolutely fantastic. But the experience going to Cambridge for a couple of years is going to be very different to going to London for a couple of years. We know that. And if that's a big piece of their decision making, then that really does bolster the LBS side of it. It's a tough call. The fact of the matter is this candidate got into some great schools. This candidate has a great, presumably great profile, 3.7 GPA, 750 GMAT, we know that. This is a smart dude, or dude being gender neutral. This is a smart person. They will be successful. And it may well be because they went to LBS or Sloan, but at the end of the day, whichever school they go to, I'm sure they're going to never look back and have a great career going forward. But I get the thing. And obviously, we've got a couple of folks on the site that have weighed in on this. There's no clear-cut answer, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. And the only thing that I would add is that, you know, one thing to consider is to get that tech job, is it going to really depend on MIT or LBS, or is it going to depend on the projects they worked on at MBB, right? So if they do go to McKinsey and they end up having Amazon or Google or somebody as a client, that's probably more likely to determine their ability to jump over and work in tech, or just that network, right, of consulting that they'll have. And you know, kind of those are Bain and all those companies have really strong networks across all these companies, right? So that might be even more important than where they went to get their MBA. Whereas when it's your first job out of school, obviously you want to focus on the placement stats and every detail there. So again, as you correctly point out, this person cannot go wrong. They can only go right. They've got, you know, some fantastic options, and congratulations to them for getting into so many top schools.
But you do raise another really good point though, Graham. Some of this decision is based on their own background and what they bring to the table. So they might have strong engineering experience, a strong network in on the tech side already, and so on and so forth. Or they may be coming from a liberal arts background. We don't really know that, I don't think. So so that should dial into this calculus too, I think, a little bit.
Agreed. All right. Well, to all the nervous listeners awaiting word on admissions decisions, hopefully the last 30 minutes or so have helped you to kind of focus on something else or on other people's problems, other candidates and their profiles. But thanks for listening. As always, please remember to rate and review this podcast. And I guess we'll see everyone in a week's time when hopefully I will have a voice. Alex, thanks so much for picking out the profiles as always.
Brilliant. Best of luck, everyone, and stay safe.